Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast, where we beat that Celtic ass, though. Woo! How about that? I thought for sure they were going to get their butts kicked. I didn't think that was going to end well at all. I'm joined by Pete Zayas and some weirdos wearing a fedora in my office right now.
What's up, guys? I'm back.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah. Pete and I, we were going to record basically right after the game, and then Harrison and I had to eat. We were set up. We were ready to record. We decided you need a drink after a game like that.
So, hell yeah,
man. Yes. Yeah. After a trade deadline like that, a week that we have
10
all
days,
had.
Really?
Yeah. The 10 days that we have all had recently, I have a glass of wine. And look, the Lakers won. So basically today, we're going to celebrate that Lakers win. For the most part, it's going to be mostly positive there. We are going to talk about the way that the Lakers handled the deadline. We are going to review how things went down and how we feel about the moves that were actually made. I might have to add another one of those I Will Remember You songs edits for Ivica Zubats.
I'll just sing it myself. You don't have to edit it in.
We'll probably get to Zubats and all that stuff in segments 2-ish and 3. But let's start with that win. That was incredible. It's a season changer. Would you be cool going that far?
It really has a chance of being, man. Like, we'll talk about it in context with the trade deadline. So first of all, the Lakers are trying to kill me, and I'm convinced of that now. Like, they could not win a game like this by like 7, right? No, it has to be like the ball's batted around 3 times and then goes to Rondo. Of course, Rondo is the game winner, right?
Like the least predictable shooter on the team. Like, you just have no right. idea what's going to happen when the ball gets into his hands.
Do you remember,
man, just what a win?
Do you remember in 2010, Pete, the Game 7 in 2010, the Lakers were, they had it, it looked like they had it all wrapped up, and Rondo improbably makes those two random fall-away three-pointers?
Yes, yes. The end of that game was insane. Kobe almost lost the ball out of bounds.
Yeah.
And then, like, Sasha comes off the bench and drills two free throws, like, two of the biggest free throws in Lakers history. Yeah, Rondo... Playoff Rondo is actually a thing, and like big game Rondo. He does
National
not like to view it that way, but that dude's a big time player. Even though he's driving me friggin' crazy on the defensive end.
Anthony was so excited by that win. He got up off of his couch, shot off towards the door, just running around his house. He hadn't finished his recap yet. Like,
I like,
I don't know whether he's mad or just think that it's funny. You're like,
I can't repeat what I was yelling, though. We probably shouldn't yell.
No, we'd have to bleep it. I mean, it's not my podcast. I don't care if you get in trouble.
Yeah, and I had some choice remarks for the people of Boston. So I wanna talk, though, about what this like, if we put this win in context, right? If we were to go there and say, all right, the Celtics, who were basically, they were missing Aron Baynes, but they had another extra from Vikings to be able to make up for that.
They've always got one, like, big random white dude that kills us, man.
And he's always really popular for some reason in Boston.
I wonder why that is.
but the Celtics were mostly healthy. They had all of their key players there. They're playing at home. They didn't have to deal with any of the stuff that the Lakers had to deal with over the last few days, over the last 10 days. The Lakers are already missing Lonzo Ball. Josh Hart was barely able to play tonight. He was barely on the court. Kyle Kuzma still doesn't look 100%. Ivica Zubats, Svi Mykhailiuk, and Michael Beasley weren't there because they are no longer Lakers. Reggie Bullock was not available because his trade is still being processed. Same goes for Mike Muscala. And yet, they pull this out. They compete, and they pull it out. And to me, like, this is why I say, and Harrison, Pete and I are We're just fans. We spend a lot of time on this stuff, but you're pretty good at contextualizing things a little bit because you're Spock. But would you agree that, like, this has the opportunity to really kind of swing the way that this season was going?
Yeah, I mean, I think the other big thing for me is that, like, if they hadn't won this game, then all of a sudden you go into the next 2 days. Like, they have the next 2 days off before the Sixers game.
That's all
they're
hearing.
Just 2 more days of their hearing, like, oh, this team has fallen apart. They couldn't handle the trade.
Yeah.
teammates that can help LeBron win. He's going to be trying to trade them as soon as the summer happens. And, like, that's still going to be a narrative, and that's something that we're going to talk about later in this show. But for right now, just for the team to survive and their chemistry to come back together, like, getting a win like that, where, like, all the guys are mobbing Rondo and picking him up afterwards, like, as Rondo just shouts expletives at the Boston organization and their fans.
Did you see that, Pete? Did you see his...
Yeah, it was great, man. No, Rondo is...
He was just, like, flailing.
MFing everybody in the
stands. All of his limbs were just flying around as the Lakers tried to celebrate around it, and there's just F-bomb after F-bomb, and everyone surrounding him. It was one of the funniest things I've seen, like, as far as celebrating a game. But, yeah, like, you have something like that where all of a sudden everybody feels good about each other. You know, maybe LeBron will apologize to all of his teammates for trying to trade them over the last couple days, and they'll be able to come together and sing Kumbaya or whatever.
The difference between, like, I tweeted in the last minute of the game that I was really proud of how the guys played and the effort, like, how well they competed. I was really worried that this was going to be a team that was really, the morale was really down because of, you know, everybody being on the trade block like that. And it did. It definitely started, bro, the start of that game with, like, especially with, like, the way it was going with, like, Tatum and Jaylen Brown killing it while our young guys are struggling. I'm like, just shoot me. Just delete Twitter from my phone.
Yep.
And, you know, like, just not like this. And it kind of reminded me of that game 7 of 2010. Different stakes, obviously, but, like, the way the Lakers, like, you know, all of these arguments I've been in with people about Kobe, and he's shooting, like, 3 for 20. You know, like, it's like, not like this. Not like this.
Right. Ingram starts 0 for 4.
Right, and I think it was 1 for 9 in the first half, and he didn't shoot particularly well, but his defense was huge, and it showed up in his plus minus in that game. But the difference in that between what a moral victory, oh, they played hard but couldn't pull it out against a good Boston team, and an actual win in that manner is just massive. And that's why I don't think that it's an exaggeration to think that could be a turning point for the rest of the season.
I want to make a point here while it's at the top of my tweet deck, because you mentioned Ingram's defense. Kyrie here, this is from Adam Himmelsbach. Himmelsbach? Whatever his name is. Kyrie, quote, being guarded by, I think he says Ingram.
Yeah, it was Ingram. He was citing Ingram's link.
So, being guarded by Brandon Ingram most of the game, I can't even lie to you guys. Those guys on the defensive end are unusual. Driving lanes that I see against every other team, they were closing down the lane. And look, you and I have been talking about this all year, from the very beginning of the year, that, you know, hoping for specific statistics on for Brandon Ingram defensively or offensively, like, that's the wrong way to approach hoping to see growth in Ingram. And the way that he accepted the challenge, no matter, because Boston has a ton of really good one-on-one guys. Kyrie is at the top of that list, but Jason Tatum is smooth on the offensive end. Gordon Hayward is still coming back from these things. Jaylen Brown was showing some of the athletic bursts that made him, you know, right up there with some of the top prospects in the league. And Ingram was there competing with all of them, even though, and this is where sometimes young players set each other apart. When a young player struggles offensively, they all too often allow that to affect the way that they play defensively. And I thought Ingram still stayed focused. And given all the noise, and this is what you and I have been talking about now for about a week now, Pete, and you and I have been talking about it too, Harrison, all of the noise that's been going on just doesn't seem to affect Ingram.
Yeah, I mean, he's been unfazable. You and I were joking that Ingram should, like that they should just put Ingram's name in trade rumors to make him play better constantly.
All the time.
Just constantly. Like, they should leak tomorrow and just be like, if he had continued to play badly tonight, just
tell him
tomorrow,
there's no trade deadline.
Just be like, no, we've promised him to New Orleans. He's definitely going to get traded. And then Ingram's just like, F these guys. I'm going to go ball out. Because he was the only one that seemed to be complete. Well, we can't really tell with Lonzo because he wasn't playing by the time the trade rumors hit.
You can't really tell anything with Lonzo anyway.
Well, and you can't tell, like, it's hard to say with the other guys, but it was just, like, it was encouraging over the last couple weeks to see, like, him not getting his head and getting down and whatever. Like, I think that is a good thing for his long-term development, that he was able to just shake all that stuff off and go out and play, and then, like, tonight to continue to play strong even though he didn't shoot well, I think is just, like, it's huge. Like, I think this is the type of game that Magic is going to be sending Dell Demps sometime in June.
Oh, man. I'm not going to admit to how many times I searched Dell Demps on Twitter. He doesn't have a Twitter, it turns out. which is kind of a bummer. But
I think they're just going to text him highlights of this game and be like, that's the young core you've been waiting for.
Right, right. It's going to be the LeBron meme where he's like pointing like this. I said it was like the Black Panther. Well, you don't really get the reference because you don't really know what Black... You didn't
he only
see
watches
Black
film. He doesn't
I
watch
actually
movies.
Watched Black Panther, believe it or not.
Yeah. Where he's like, is this your king?
Yes.
Is this your king?
That's Magic Johnson pointing at Tatum.
Yeah. Is this your prospect? We're going to take a quick second here, and when we come back, we're just going to keep celebrating, man. We haven't been able to do this very much, so we're going to do that. We're, you know, eventually I'm sure we'll make some points about the way that the Lakers handled the trade deadline, and there are some points to be made. But for right now, this is just too much fun. So cheers to everybody listening right now. We'll come back here in a second. All right, so we'll come back to this. In terms of what the new guys that are coming in that are on their way in, Reggie Bullock, who I'm the most excited for, Mike Muscala, whatever.
I think that we're all in universal agreement on that, right?
But in terms of what these guys who are coming in might be able to offer, the Lakers wind up setting a franchise record 22 three-pointers that they hit tonight.
Yeah.
This is huge. If Reggie Bullock is able to come in and maintain his percentages,
they're already making an impact.
Or I said that they acquired better 2K sliders at the deadline, which I'd be all for.
Went underreported.
But Pete, watching how the rotations went down today, you're starting to get into a bit of a numbers crunch because of all of the guys who played that 2/3 spot. Do you think they'll be able to figure out a way to utilize Reggie Bullock?
I think Reggie Bullock needs to take Josh Hart's minutes, at least for the time being. And if things get worked out from there, but Josh isn't physically right, I don't think, and he's missed games and his time's been limited. I think the All-Star break's going to be great for Josh, and perhaps there is, you know, a place in the rotation. But right now, in this last, 29 games or so, Lakers need to win games, and it's something that they can't wait for Josh to get right. And so I think that's where that comes from. It's also like, this game, I think, saved Luke, the way it turned out, at least, saved Luke from a lot of criticism. He did these hockey subs and that, like, it's those unreal lineups, those bench lineups, man, were just getting crushed. And it was like, and it's not just like bench lineups, because like the starting big with JaVale and Tyson Chandler, they're a bit interchangeable. But like JaVale was a -21 in a game that they won by one, and he played 30 minutes.
So JaVale hasn't been good in weeks outside of like one or two games.
Right. Absolutely. And so I think that even a guy like Muscala, he provides a different look, at least, than JaVale and Tyson Chandler do as a stretch big. He's not a good defender, but he is a guy who can – he hits 34% of threes, which isn't great, but it's not nothing, right? And
they actually have to scout for him.
He'd be the fourth best shooter on the Lakers right now out of the guys that have taken a fair amount.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that was interesting tonight that is easy to overlook, LeBron played some five tonight. That was part of the lineup in the second quarter, at least, that made it at least respectable again. I think they were down 18, and they cut it down a bit with LeBron. I think he only played 3 or 4 minutes. That's something worth keeping an eye on going forward if that's going to continue.
I mean, do you think he was willing to play the five just like that's going to be something that continues, or is it just because he enjoys crushing and like sunning Al Horford?
I think Boston in particular. That's what made me the most surprised with how he came out to start tonight's game or last night's game, was that he looked kind of lackadaisical. I didn't know whether to attribute it to him not being completely right physically or whatever, but he didn't look like typical LeBron until he did. And it seemed like what really ignited him kind of getting back into the game was playing the five, was being matched up against Al Horford. And look, I think it's I don't know if there's necessarily a correlation between those two things, but it was definitely a really good look. I like the way that lineup looked out there.
Yeah, I just don't think LeBron wanted to do it for 82 games. I think after the deadline especially, I think we are in the, okay, now it's serious portion of the season with LeBron now healthy. He's had a few games back. I don't think he's at 100%, but he looked better physically tonight than he has.
He said in his walk-off tonight, I don't know if you caught it, that he was feeling a lot closer and more healthy and more confident.
Yeah, it definitely looked that way. And I think that combined with the stakes, like Lakers are now a game and a half out of the 8 seed, and the Clippers, you know, traded their best player in Tobias Harris. Like, it's gettable, and even beyond the 8 seed is gettable. And I think we're at that portion of the season where LeBron's like, all right, time to turn it up. And so within that, him playing some small ball 5, I think, is on the table, especially now that Zoo's been traded. And even with Muscala coming in, you don't necessarily have established rotation guys at that spot. I think LeBron's more like, yeah, I'll do that for 25 games or whatever, rather than the 82 starting at the beginning of the year.
Which I can't really blame him for at age 34. Yeah. You know, that I don't blame him for that at all. You mentioned, Pete, you mentioned that, you know, this might be quote unquote go time for LeBron. And what that tells me, because what I've noticed this season, when LeBron is healthy and when LeBron is ready to go, that the Lakers basically take his lead in terms of the amount of energy that they put forth out there. And if it is really go time for the Lakers, or for LeBron, the trickle-down effect that might have for the Lakers is huge, right? Because you have a bunch of guys right now. It's unfortunate the way that it all played out timeline-wise, but heading into the trade deadline, these guys' values were all at their absolute lowest.
Yep.
But if LeBron does say it's go time, and if everybody else involved raises their games to that, like, this is it's hard not to feel like tonight's the beginning of that climb back up to, oh yeah, that's right, that's why the Lakers were in that 4 seed once upon a time.
It's hard not to feel that way. I would caution people against feeling that way too strongly, because they do, again, have like the third hardest schedule heading down the stretch of the league. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to be a difficult climb. Tonight was a very nice win, but, you know, we'll see. But I'll let you guys, you guys are both fans, wow, so I'll let you get really excited.
I think that, I mean,
we need to get Harrison a drink.
Good luck with that, man. You did water shots last time because of him, and you know how that turned out. So.
Fair point. I got my water shot right here.
Jesus.
Good Lord.
It's terrible luck, man. It's like every like non-white person cringes when you hear that, like doing water shots. That's like number one, like
it's voodoo
superstition. Like, yeah, you don't do water shots, man. Anyway,
I didn't ask to do that.
I was trying to include you.
Well, that's what you get.
That's what we get.
It's what we got, too.
It's what we got. It was next morning. Anyway, the thing about this team is, like, when they're healthy, they were pretty good before all of the injuries and all that. My big concern was all of the crap with the trade deadline was introducing an entirely different dynamic where, like, before that happened, I was like, yeah, this team's going to make the playoffs. I know they're not currently in the 8 seed or in the top 8, but when they played, when they're healthy, knowing that LeBron has extra gears, I was really worried that the trade deadline was going to poison the well in a way that they wouldn't be able to do that. But if they can move on, I'll be very impressed. And I think that's the biggest thing about tonight. It's not necessarily how they played, but the timing of it relative to all of that bad mojo going on. It feels like a reset button of some sorts that needed to happen in this particular game more than any other. Like, and how it happened was exactly how it needed to happen.
And winning was very important, because merely competing, like, it feels like a coping mechanism that you know, you had already alluded to earlier, that, you know, all of the things that the Lakers were up against tonight, it was just great to see them compete. It feels like a coping mechanism when you go down that road. But for a team that is in the spot that they are in currently, that is in the middle of a playoff race, that we're going to start counting wins and losses if we aren't already doing that right now. Getting the win especially felt very important. I don't know if I would still feel the same if they had just merely lost and competed.
No, of course you wouldn't.
Well, not. I think it would be, I would head back towards, like, oh man, this really still might not be a good place. Like, the vibe wouldn't be at all positive, I don't think, had they lost. I don't think there would be there wouldn't be a, well, they competed, they did all that. I don't think there would be any of those any of that nuance there, because they'd have 2 days to listen to how they once again blew a situation down the line late in the fourth quarter. Last thing before we go to a break here, before we come back and we talk about the trade deadline and how the Lakers handled that. KCP, I think, is going to be huge for the Lakers. There was all of the talk about it. We laughed about it quite a bit, about how, he wanted out, he wanted a larger role, and he wanted all of this. He hit some monstrous buckets in last night's game. Absolutely huge. Made that huge play on a loose ball to get it back to LeBron in the corner. Will we start to see, do you think we can maybe start to see more of the good KCP, not the inconsistent, but more of the good KCP?
I think that's dangerous to predict. I think that his agency, but I mean, because we've seen him, he swings, he goes up and down like a roller coaster.
He does.
And like, I do think, him and his agent canvassed the league. They looked for the best opportunity for him to be in a position to get paid next summer. And I think that they decided that was here. Mm-hmm. And I think you saw him go out and take the first couple steps towards that tonight. Now, like, the key for him is going to be to continue it. And, he's had strong stretches during his time as a Laker. I can't claim to have watched him a ton as a Piston, but like, he's also inconsistent. And so I don't know, I think maybe something changed, but I don't know. I didn't see anything. I only watched the second half tonight because I missed the first half for class. So maybe you can tell me more, but I didn't see him playing tremendously differently. I just saw him hitting shots. If he's hitting shots, that's going to be huge for him and the Lakers, but he's got to continue to do that consistently.
Yeah, KCP playing well is found money. And mm-hmm. Part of what I'm excited about with Reggie Bullock coming into the fold is that he's stylistically similar to KCP. But KCP is their only guy they can run off of screens on a regular basis before they acquired Bullock. And KCP is so inconsistent that when he doesn't have it, that takes one very important element of how to run an NBA offense off of the table mm-hmm. in terms of having a guy coming off of screens. Now you at least have a chance between him and Reggie Bullock.
Do you think Bullock and he can play side by side? Last thing, and then we'll go to break.
Yeah, Bullock can play some three. He's played a lot of three in his career. He's an okay defender. He's a better ball handler than KCP is, so he's better at, say you close out hard to him, he can get all the way to the basket and make a layup, even though he's quick, but he doesn't have a great vertical, so he can get blocked at the rim a lot, but he can get all the way to the rack, whereas KCP is more of a, I'm not comfortable doing that, so I'm going to take the dribble pull up on the mid-range type shot. So you can play them together, but you probably need, and that'd be great spacing for LeBron, for sure, but you need other guys to handle the ball because neither guy can do it that much.
You said stylistically similar. How stylistically similar are we talking? Are there still going to be the brain dead pull-ups and transition and the insane what on earth were you even thinking? Have you played basketball before plays, or you just mean the good things?
No, it's the good stuff. Mostly. Yeah. It's he's not as good of a defender as KCP is. And KCP I think is probably a little overrated on that end. I think he's an okay defender and Bullock is maybe a step below that, but you get a lot less of the what the hell are you even. So the Lakers were down six with a minute and a half left or so, and they ran a play for, I think it was intended for a KCP corner three, but when he caught it, he had his weight on his back heels and he kind of pump faked.
Yeah.
And then he still shot it anyway, and those shots are so hard, those break rhythm threes.
Especially
and he still drilled
backward.
Right, exactly, and he still drilled it, and so as he was shooting, I'm like, what are you doing? No,
that was the peak shot.
Yeah,
and he takes those all the time, but he just happened to hit this one.
It was a huge shot too. It was a monster shot. All right, we're gonna come back here, and when we come back, I wanted to save the third segment to allow us to just kind of wander around the topic of the trade deadline. I hope you guys had your fun with just celebrating the win, and we'll still keep it relatively light. But there are points that have to be made about this front office that we will get to here in a second. So the Lakers walk away from negotiations with the Pelicans, according to the reports. And I would imagine we're going to get some columns about how everything went down and the lapses in communication and some details that we may not have heard about previously. But the Lakers walk away. They don't wind up, the Pelicans don't wind up taking them up on what I still think is an altogether, if not maybe overly fair, deal for Anthony Davis. But they walk away now from the trade deadline with a shooter and Reggie Bullock, something that we definitely that the Lakers definitely needed. Wow, I went to the Wii. You can tell the Lakers beat the Celtics when I dropped the Wii on a podcast. but the Lakers get a shooter in Reggie Bullock. They get a five who can spread the floor in Mike Muscala, and they have an open roster spot now, hopefully for a Wayne Ellington or maybe a Trevor Ariza. But Chris Haynes went on NBA TV today and said when Carmelo Anthony gets there, that makes me a little
Anthony,
nervous.
I'm just going to say this now. It's not going to be Davis, but you're not going to be the only Anthony in Lakerland for very long.
At least I won't be the least popular one anymore. That'll be kind of nice. but Pete, how do you think the Lakers handled the trade deadline as a concept?
So I thought they handled the Anthony Davis situation poorly. And that said, I was afraid it was going to be a lot worse than it was. I don't think that trading everybody for Anthony Davis is a sustainable way to get to where we want to go, which is an NBA title.
Everybody and everything.
Right, yeah, it was. Exactly. I was all in favor of the cover of like the throwing the kitchen sink at them, but like not. Yes. Don't be the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah.
Right.
It was when they started to talk about like four draft picks that I was like, yes. Okay, that's way too much.
There's a difference between going all in and it being a robbery and not necessarily a negotiation that's being done with the idea of like, let's reach a deal together. Part of it, and this is something I think the Lakers and Laker fans, I think we'd be wise to be more sensitive to it, especially management, in that like, you can't, in a situation like that, approach it from the perspective of we're going to take your guy from you.
Yeah.
And I think
completely
that
agree.
The approach, and this goes for Rich Paul too, right? The public trade demand, and you know he wants to run cover for Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis is not going to make a big stink, and that's not the type of guy that he is. That's why you hire Rich Paul, right? Is to fight that battle for you. But there needs to be some degree of finesse, both from Rich Paul's perspective and the Lakers' perspective. Of the first thing the Lakers should have done, but even before making serious offers, is like, what do you want? What are you looking for? Sure, everybody wants to win a trade, and in a league with 30 teams, if you can screw the other guy, that's great. But if you take that, if you go into negotiations with that idea in mind,
that like, as an expectation.
And that rubs people the wrong way. You know, like Windhorse is reporting that, you know, the Pelicans just wanted to get it out there and sabotage the Lakers season, right? And that's like, part of that is them thumbing their nose at the Lakers for the way the Lakers approach it and for the way that Rich Paul approaches it too. So my biggest concern is that it was going to fry the locker room, and that's why a win like this was so important. I'm glad it ended the way that it did without them making that trade, and I hope they learned some lessons from it, but there's definitely concerns going forward in that respect.
I did that live show today for Locked On NBA, which is now a podcast you guys can all check out if you guys want to listen to that. You get a great reaction to the Zubats trade that happened while I was on the air, so that was incredible. But I was thinking back because I was trying to process the way that this whole trade deadline and Anthony Davis saga came together, and I thought two moments I think came and passed without enough acknowledgement. One of them was before Davis's trade demand, before he even made it publicly known that he wanted out there. There was that whole, you know, random thing from, I think it was even, it wasn't even Demps, it was their coach.
Gentry,
who said, you know, we hope that they kind of look into tampering because of LeBron's statement about whatever so-and-so.
Well, that was the first flare-up when LeBron said he'd want to play with Anthony Davis before their nationally televised game so that ESPN could talk about it the entire time.
Thank you. So that was the first moment to me that I said, in looking back, we should have taken note of that, because that, I think, set the tone for how those talks were going to go.
Of, like, F you guys.
Yes. Yeah. Immediately. Before they even got into the negotiations. And then the second one was a really brief report that alluded to the Lakers making a real lowball offer.
Yeah.
That was, like, Rondo and Lance and, like, a couple middling picks. And I had said that heading into these things, you have to operate in good faith. And when you do something like that to an organization that's already going to be emotional and illogical, from that point on, they're just going to say, no, fuck these guys. I'm not going
to
work with them.
To be fair, there was a report earlier on than that, that the Lakers had basically offered them everything. They hadn't offered all the future picks yet, but they had offered basically all of the young guys. Like, I think Ingram was out of it at that point. But, like, they had made a more respectful offer than was secondarily leaked. My theory on that second leak about the lowball offer was not just to make the Lakers look unreasonable. It was also to put Rondo in the rumors and see, and Stevenson in the rumors, and see if they would, like, get really upset. I think that's why you saw that second leak. And then I wanted to go back on a point that Pete talked about. You were talking about the Windhorse thing, and he used the term information wars, and, like, just as an aside, thank God he didn't say info wars. That would have been just so uncomfortable on live TV. But he said information wars. And, like, I want to go back on that, because, like, I think that you can take a lot of issues with the way that the Lakers handled this, like, not coming to the table, like, with New Orleans, and, like, having that sit down with them, having this attitude of, like, no, F you guys, we're coming to seal your stars, I'm Magic Johnson, we're back, all that stuff. Like, you can take all the issues with that if you want. Like, my thing as, like, a member of the media, like, this whole thing has honestly made me reconsider how much I want to do journalism, like, as a career and just as a whole, because like, what are we doing here? Like, I don't want to be a newsbreaker. Like, you're either, like, actively sitting here, you're acting as PR for someone, you're, like, knowingly peddling falsehoods, or you're just, like, you're being, like, purposefully ignorant, or just being used as a leak or a pawn or whatever, and it's just so that you can get retweets on Twitter. Like, this stuff is stupid. It's like you have to know sometimes. There has to be some level of critical thought before you put this stuff out there. And, like, I don't want to criticize anyone specific or, like, call anyone out. Like, I know that people in the media work hard, but, like, my thing is, like if something just, like, if everything is just so clearly a leverage play back and forth between national reporters and local reporters and whatever,
then,
and these leaks
context
are so transparent of where they're coming from, like, I don't know. Like, what are we even doing here? Like, are we soap opera writers? Like, I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
it's no, just, this is
know.
All.
I don't,
like,
understand the point.
Bro, most of this is BS, and it's a big game. So, like, like Woj, for example, right? Woj is not an objective reporter that doesn't care. Nobody that gets to the top of their game, to the top of an industry that's as competitive as this, without being a goddamn great white shark. Mm-hmm. Now, we always mock Woj for not having sources inside of the Lakers. How do you think a guy like Woj is going to react to that and treat that? He's going to punish the Lakers for that at every chance that he can. Every chance that he gets that he has an opportunity to use his possession and his credibility to damage the Lakers as a way of saying F you for not letting me into this organization. It's a leverage. So, like, the idea that everybody's acting as these objective, that's part of why, like, Laker is in my name, like, Laker film room, right? And I'm very front with
Put your bias up front. Like, that's my thing. Like, if you're
watching freaking Chris Mannix go on and do PR for the Celtics on all of these different shows, get the hell out of here, man. Like,
that
just
man,
be
that man could tell
me
you how anything helps the Celtics.
Yeah.
Be like, well, global warming, actually, if you think about it, is a great thing for Boston this summer. You know, they can get guys
to a colder climate.
Yeah.
It's a colder climate.
Let's tie this with the Lakers, though. This is not an accident. It's not just because most of these dudes are from New England or have worked on the East Coast or anything like that. The Celtics foster this sort of thing. There's nothing more than an NBA reporter likes than feeling like they're on the inside and they have special information because they're so special, right? And then they go out, and when they get that inside information, the way that they frame the events that surround that particular team, you don't think that, like, the Celtics understand how to use this and understand how to manipulate it? And then they go out, and it's like a wind-up toy, man. Then they go on these programs, and then they're going to be defending these guys or doing what Woj is doing and giving a middle finger to the Lakers.
And hey, we should say, Magic Johnson is just as good at working a room and doing this kind of stuff.
Yeah. But I don't think he is, man. We don't have as many national media guys. That's actually part of my complaint is why aren't we doing these sorts of campaigns?
Well, they hired him. He's now a Lakers employee. Kevin Ding is literally a Lakers employee. No, it's not. I'm not. We can joke and stuff, but he's literally employed by the Lakers now.
Yes.
Remember that hit piece that he wrote about Wesley Johnson? Remember when he wrote that hit piece about Wesley Johnson the day after he fired Pelinka? Oh, totally coincidence. Like, they all do this. They all do it. But I wish to the point that Harrison was making earlier, I wish they were more upfront about it. I wish they wouldn't act as if it's this terrible, terrible thing to connect dots between who might be getting information from where. Like, if anything,
aggregate. Just when you get something, like, ask who this benefits.
Right.
Like,
and maybe offer it up. Offer that up. Right? Like, why not?
Harrison,
why not offer that
up? You're like altruistic and like earnest and stuff, and like most people
you actually
like
look
that.
Like a journalist right
I
now.
I got that. I can put my press card right in here.
You're one of like five people trying to do this honestly, Harrison. Like, and trying to like do the live up to the ethics of journalism and all of that.
I'm still in school, so maybe that's part of it. I don't know, but. Yeah.
No, it's admirable, and I'm not making fun of you for it or thinking that you're naive or anything. Maybe a little naive though, in that like most of these dudes are not doing it the same way that you're doing it. They don't have the same mindset that you do. My biggest complaint at all of this is that like, hey, why don't the Lakers like use these same tactics to get people on their side? So
you
there's
would think
some
Pelinka would have his connections from his days as an ace.
Yes, that's why Pelinka's around, right? Is to do this like great white shark stuff, right? And that's actually been a disappointment of mine. Is that they don't all most of the warfare that was going on was the Lakers were on the receiving end of those missiles. Man, I'd like to launch some of them personally.
Rich Paul was sending some.
Yeah, oh no, Rich Paul can do it, but he can't do it alone, especially in the position of an agent. I just want Lakers to be better at the game.
Yeah, well, and that was a complaint under the previous front office, right? Was that they weren't as good at the game, and we were promised that this new front office was going to be better at the game.
The last front office was actually criticized for not tampering, and that was why they brought in these new guys, and then like apparently they just aren't tampering all that effectively.
Oh, they're tampering too brazenly.
It's like they're too obvious about it.
Right? No chill, man. They got no
It's somewhat shocking to me somehow. It's not shocking at all that Magic doesn't have tact in that respect. It doesn't surprise me at all.
But that's okay. Like Magic should be the front man of this, right? Like, he's Magic Johnson. He's one of the like all time greats. His damn statue is outside of the building. Pelinka should be
the one
trying
to trade it for Anthony Davis,
right?
But you know.
All right, let's talk about the deals that they made individually before we get out of here and send everybody off into their weekends. How do you feel, Harrison, about... You said you didn't know anything about Mike Muscala. You've never thought about him ever.
No, I was telling you, like, if you had hired a community college basketball player to walk into the house, like, and you were just like, this is Mike Muscala, I'd be like... I'd have a 50% chance of figuring out whether or not you're lying. Like, that's how little I'm aware of him. In theory, from what I have seen, he sounds like he could be helpful. I think Bullock is probably going to be the more helpful addition. I think we're all in agreement on mm-hmm. that. I think that they didn't necessarily acquire these guys with like the smartest management of assets, but you know, that's just me.
Do you think I kind of sort of feel like they overpaid in both moves?
Yeah,
I do. I think that at that level of move, it's not terribly harmful, like, you know, giving up a second round pick along with Svi, for example.
I just think it's indicative of not winning on the margins consistently under this front office. I think this has been like a consistent problem for them. It's not just these. It re-emphasizes something that is a concern going forward as this team tries to hit its ceiling. You need to nail all these little marginal things, and I just don't know that they've done that well. They've actually done a lot of the big things outside of this Anthony Davis trade pretty well, but like they've hit on a lot of their draft picks. They signed LeBron, like all this stuff. It's the outside, it's the role players, it's the trades, that kind of stuff that they haven't done that well on.
Yeah, you're not going to get an argument from me on that. And, you know, they trade for a guy like Bullock, and then a guy like Wayne Ellington comes on the market for free a day later. And it would be great to have both of them. I actually wouldn't mind to continue to pursue Ellington. That said,
I love that you guys are continuing. I love that you guys are pretending that it's just not going to be Carmelo Anthony. Yeah. There's a chance. Right. Like,
I think the Lakers need another point guard, especially with Lonzo out. They need a third guy, you know, and that's something that they need, a guy to, like, that can do that a lot more. Like, look, man, we got Josh Hart and KCP and Reggie Bullock and Lance Stephenson, who's been playing well. Like, they don't really need a 2-3 type of guy like Wayne Ellington. And even with, like, you could argue there's a spot open for Melo in that Beasley's gone, right? Yep. But I would just
That didn't get past me that it was Beasley that was on the way out. Literally the guy whose role Melo would play.
Right. And that said, like, they've got Kuzma, they've got LeBron, Ingram can play some four and small ball lineups. Like, what they really need is a guy when Rondo's out to actually organize things, especially with Lonzo being out and with Lonzo being injury prone too. Even when Lonzo gets back, by the way, Lonzo's going to add a great element to the rest of this team that they don't have another guy who can defend.
LeBron said we missed our young star PGs though tonight.
Yeah.
Which is like, I don't know if that's just trying to pump him up for Dell Demps, but, you know.
I think LeBron's got some fences to mend. And he does. This was probably
100%.
This was something that, like, the way that it went down was really clunky and awkward. That said, like, being traded for Anthony Davis or trying to be traded for Anthony Davis is not the biggest insult in the world, right? Like, I think this was a great, like, this is a business type moment for the young guys to be able to learn that. But it's different when it comes from a guy that you share the court with.
Yeah, and that's the thing to me. Yeah. It's like, and it was icon so, that you, like, grew it up was so loving. Brazen. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just like, it wasn't. Like, if it had been a little bit more subtler, it was more clear that it was just the Lakers working this, and they were trying to do the thing. Then, you know, you rally around LeBron, even if he has the same agent. Like, guys aren't going to take that personal. It just, like, LeBron kicking it off was so transparent in the way that everything went down.
The good news is he didn't draft a shit ton of free agents to be for his All-Star team.
That was great.
Should we just call All-Star Weekend, like, Tampering International Waters? Like, is that the name of LeBron's team?
That was such great entertainment.
Yeah,
I think the only tweak I would make to that, I'm probably going to talk about this on Locked On NBA tonight. The only tweak I would make to that is I want the guys who are being drafted in the room while they're being drafted. It'll never happen. But the TV and the drama that would be taking place while that happens would just be...
Like you're at the park or at the, you know, like picking like you.
And you keep the camera on the guys just standing there the whole time.
Right.
Like the pile of leftover guys. Like, right. Bradley Beal just has to stand there with his arms crossed after he gets selected last.
It's like D'Angelo Russell got picked kind of early.
Yeah,
I thought it was really funny that
he got picked really early, before Beal. Could you just imagine Beal's face when D'Angelo Russell got picked?
He's a camera phone Beal. Dude.
You saw Beal in that interview, right?
Where, that was like, what I mean. It was from, like, 6 days ago. He was going off. He's like, you guys just want to see who gets picked last. It's like, well,
That wasn't from today. I thought that was from today, and he was just like, this is stupid.
No,
and
I think it was, like, 6 days ago. Like, he knew. He knew it was
too good.
Poor Bradley Beal.
He probably hates John Wall so much.
Because now it's like, is it better to miss out on the All-Star game than to get picked last? Like, because then nobody's going to make fun of you anymore. Like, I don't know.
I think, you know, you make fun of it for like 5 minutes and then people move on.
Yeah, that's true.
Last thing here, the Lakers have a couple days off before they play against Philadelphia. We're probably, maybe a week or two away from Lonzo coming back?
I think that right after the All-Star break, so that would be the 21st. That would be the fourth week. So it depends on. I still maintain that it's going to be more toward the 6 to 8 week end of things, based on the grade three and all that. But yeah, if he could be back in the next couple weeks,
I think there's reason for optimism. I'm willing to stick my neck out there and say that there's reason to feel optimistic about this team. Two reasons why. Big picture, they didn't take on any money, which tells me they didn't get any negative intel about free agents that are coming this upcoming summer, Right. They did. That tells me that they haven't heard for sure they're going to strike out.
Yeah.
Right. They haven't heard for sure that they're going to strike out. That's big picture. Small picture, these wins like this in Boston, the way they won it, the way that they competed, like, that shit matters. And I think, you know, you combine those two things, and this is probably the best I've felt about the Lakers, even if they go out and they lose against Philadelphia, right? Philadelphia brings in Tobias Harris. They have all this momentum after a pretty successful trade deadline. Even if they go out there and lose on Sunday to Philadelphia, I still feel like there's reason that you can kind of hold on to right now and feel pretty good. Not good, not definitely not great, but good about the Lakers team.
I feel like there are 4 or 5 points in most seasons that are where you have a relatively competitive team where they can be springboards for mm-hmm. something, and like you have to capitalize and capture that. Like I don't want to say they need to win against Philly, but if they do, that is something that, like, yeah, you got momentum now.
Yeah, then you really got the ball rolling.
Two really good teams on the road. They need to capitalize on this. They've got a game or two maybe to be able to capitalize on a night like tonight and ending the way that it did in order for it to go down, you know, one path versus another. So this is an important night.
What they need to do against Philadelphia is get somebody to whisper in Jimmy Butler's ear and in Tobias Harris's ear that they're competing for max contracts.
I do think that is not that part of it, but I do think that catching Philly while they're trying to ingratiate these new guys might actually be of a benefit, because at least the guys that the Lakers are bringing in are kind of more spot-up shooters. It's not going to throw off your flow as much. Like, Tobias Harris is a big piece to bring in, and that might knock Philadelphia off kilter a little bit, at least at first. I think ultimately he'll make them better, but I think at first it's just hard to bring in a new guy.
Hopefully. That'll do it for this episode, though, of the Locked On Lakers podcast. We went a little bit long here because there was a ton to get to, and we wanted to celebrate that Celtics win. Cheers, Pete. You just you took a swig. I will take a swig as well as soon as we go off the air. Harrison, you're out of water. You even failed a swig.
No, I took a sip. There's like a couple droplets left.
No water shots.
No water shots. No water shots. Those of you listening right now, be safe this weekend. I will talk to you again on Monday. Get your questions into iTunes in the form of a 5-star review, and I will answer them. Have a great day. I will talk to you on Monday. Oh, rest in peace, Sue.
He's not dead.